Back together, you and I, on a midweek Wednesday, November 10th, 2021, on Connecticut Today. We chatted with Connecticut Energy Marketers Association head Chris Herb on the current skyrocketing oil and gas prices. AFSCME official Ron Lupica joined us to chat about a push from unionized Bridgeport municipal workers for some COVID-19 bonus money. And author Peter Wood, president of the National Association of Scholars, returned to the show to talk about his latest book, Wrath, America Enraged, and he talked about the state of political discourse in the U.S. All right, big story in the Hartford Current today, and it's kind of a summary of what people have been thinking, whether they're buying their home heating oil already or whether they're trying to fill up at the gas station and they look at the number. The numbers on the gas pumps are spinning like like a slot machine at Mohegan Sun or Foxwoods or, you know, Vegas or Atlantic City somewhere. Oh, look at that, $42. Guess I'm not eating today either. Chris Herb is one of the gentlemen quoted, one of the folks quoted in the article. Chris, we've had him on several times from SEMA, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, to talk about gas and more specifically heating oil prices, too. Chris deals with a lot of heating oil distributors as well. Hey, Chris, it's Paul here again. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Not a good time, Chris, is it? You know, I know the pandemic was into play here. We get that. We understand it. But, man, when the gas pump, Chris, starts flipping around like a slot machine and folks are seeing the bill from their oil company, it's tough times out there.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, listen, this is not just a pandemic-caused price situation. This has a lot to do with federal energy policy, with President Biden significantly changing the position that the United States plays in global oil movement. And by him stopping the XL pipeline, putting moratoriums on exploration and drilling, what we've done is we've gone from being in control globally of energy prices and keeping them low like we did a year ago, to now being at the beck and call of OPEC and Russia, which puts us in a very weak position.
Chris, that's mind numbing. And I know you're the head of a trade organization, so I'm guessing you don't get overtly political here. But to me, there's no left and right in this. America or any country, Chris Herb, I think, should have the best interests of its consumers while still having a concern about sound environmental policy and the future of where we're going. But, you know, Chris, my God, every cent or so that goes to heat our homes just to stay warm as humans or to get somewhere in a vehicle is kept out of the rest of the economy. I'm constantly, or maybe not surprised, but I'm constantly disappointed at how America's energy independence is always this political football. It drives me crazy.
Paul, you know, most of our life, the United States strove for energy independence, for us to not have to rely on foreign nations that do not agree with our way of life, do not agree with our country. And we finally achieved that a couple of years ago, only to be set back decades in that regard. So as we worked to try to not have to rely on countries like Saudi Arabia and in Iran and now Russia, now we're running to them, and the president recently asked them, would you please increase production? So the message that he has sent is, we don't want more oil that's domestically produced, that creates jobs, that's done in a responsible environmentally way. But he is allowing third world countries and oil producing countries that don't like us to do the same thing. So we are paying for his policy. Every time you fill up, every time natural gas comes into your house, every time you get a fill up.
Mind numbing. Chris, hang on. We'll get more into the details here. Chris Herb is the guest from SEMA, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Traffic and weather together. Then more with Chris on WICC. You've got it. We'll be back to open phones at the top of the hour, a little past that, 333-9422, 333-WICC. Chris Herb has been on this show many times. He's the head of the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. So, Chris, let's get specific here. Let's talk first natural gas. And I started to see some of this a few weeks ago, Chris, Is it true that folks who use natural gas for heating or cooking or in their businesses, are they really in danger of seeing double the price this heating season than they did last year?
Well, I'll tell you, the bad news, again, in prices are rising across the entire energy complex. This is not just one segment, gasoline or natural gas. What we're seeing right now is commodity costs for natural gas are up over 60%. So that eventually, through a regulated process, works its way into customers' bills. So, yes, we're going to see for several months in the making increased natural gas prices. It's, you know, every time the Public Utility Regulatory Authority announces their purchase gas adjustment, it is continues to show that these global prices that are increasing with natural gas are coming to Connecticut now.
All right, now let's go to heating oil, and this is the time of the year, Chris, when, okay, they may have a little oil left over from last year, or some people, like my parents, used to fill up the tank heading into the warmer months, so there'd be a surplus there, you know, lock it in at a cheaper price. But a lot of people, Chris, are getting their cleaning of their heating system, their oil system, heading into the colder months. If they did not lock in a cheaper price, what are the heating oil customers looking at?
Yeah, so heating oil prices are right now up about 20%. So just like natural gas, prices are on the rise. And, you know, like you mentioned, there are certain customers who will be shielded from these increases if they've locked in. I will advise everyone that there's a state law that prohibits locking in now. So as of November 1st, there is no more of that. So if you didn't do it in the summer or early fall, you're kind of missed the boat on locking your price in. You also mentioned people that get their systems tuned up. Mm-hmm. That is extremely important because you could lower the amount of fuel you use, and that's really the only proven method to actually save yourself some money is not burn that fuel because your system's running at peak efficiency and safety. So those are some of the tools that you can use to try to mitigate this. But, again, no one is immune.
Chris, you know, back to kind of the political end of this. I mean, I thought I was reading the Babylon Bee or the Onion or something the other day, Chris, where not too long ago, like earlier this week, I think Monday or Tuesday, despite all these cost concerns, I'm seeing a story where the administration is actually deliberating, and hopefully there's some pushback on the other side, actually considering shutting down another pipeline that apparently is not in the concept phase. This one is actually being used. I guess it's in the upper Midwest, and you've got some local officials of both parties there saying, what are you, crazy?
Yeah, this is extremely concerning. I think that the environmental position that those in the federal government have is why we are paying these types of prices to heat our homes and to fill our cars. You know, elections have consequences, and you know, President Biden and the majority in Congress did not hide from what they felt. So yes, they are right now considering shutting off additional supply that would meet our demands. Number one, we need to keep our homes warm. We need to keep the lights on, and that fuel does that. They shut those pipelines down. Not only are we going to have price concerns, but we may have, how do you keep the lights on? How do you keep your home warm? And that's our concern. You know, the governor came out on Friday with a press release where he did warn that the grid is fragile. If it gets really cold and natural gas supplies are inadequate to keep up, we may have problems keeping the lights on. And that should really concern everybody because it goes right back to who we elect and the policies that they're enacting.
Yeah, and Chris, finally, you know, this isn't, I stress this all the time. I said, listen, you can talk about global warming and environmental policy, but these are basics, being able to keep your home warm. I mean, we're not talking about, well, you know, these people are using the cheap fuel to go to Tahiti or to you know, fuel their private jets. This is basic stuff here. This is being able to get in whatever vehicle you own, if it's not a hybrid, and get to work or to keep your family warm. And speaking of jets, you know, the trickle-down effect of all this, Chris Herb, you know, they have to refine jet fuel, and if jet fuel gets expensive, guess who pays for it?
Paul, these are necessities of life, right? We need to get to work. We need to get our kids to school. We need to keep our home warm. We need to keep the lights on. In current energy policy and environmental politics, is pushing us to the brink. We will be tested this winter.
All right, Chris, thank you. Chris Herb, head of the CEMA, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Chris, good to chat with you. Take care. We'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Anytime, Paul. Thanks.
All right, thanks. There you go, folks. This is not, again, these are not luxury items here. And yes, you know, we were energy self-sufficient a couple of years ago during the Trump years. Well, what's happened now? Now, there are people who have said, well, we were still importing some stuff from OPEC, and that's how it's, you know, that's what's happening right now. But it is maddening. It is, I'm telling you, it is just maddening that we don't drill like crazy in this country responsibly with a small footprint and take care of our own. You know, during the pandemic, which is still going on, we've talked a lot and you've heard news stories from myself and Melissa and Lisa and our network partners about workers all over the country who say, hey, you know, we went through this pandemic. We showed up to work in some dangerous conditions. How about some pandemic hazard pay or hero pay? Well, several unionized Bridgeport municipal workers are asking for that. Coalition of, I think, about 1,300 holding a rally in a news conference earlier today. Here to talk about that and what kind of funding they are looking for. We welcome Ron Lupica to the program. Ron is affiliated with AFSCME, Local 1303-468. He is president of the Public Facilities Bargaining Unit, and he works as a maintainer. Hey, Ron, it's Paul here on WICC. How are you?
Thanks for having me on, Paul.
Appreciate the time, Ron. Give us a capsulized version here, Ron, for our listeners as to what you folks in AFSCME and these different unions are looking for in your appeal here, Ron, to the mayor and the city council. Go ahead.
Well, basically, the American Rescue Plan Act was enacted in March 11, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been reported that Bridgeport was to receive about $127 million for education and more than $85 million for non-educational purposes, which would include essential workers' premium pay. So in March of 25th, mm-hmm. 2021, Mayor Ganim, Superintendent Testani, Representative Himes, and several members of the Bridgeport City Council Public announced their support and gratitude for the federal funding allocated to Bridgeport under ARPA. So I was at that meeting. I also attended I was in on Zoom meetings with the Common Council,
mm-hmm.
where we weren't even on Resolution 7620, which is how they were going to disperse the funds. It was Jeanette Herron and Scott Burns, the council people who had a vote for an amendment to get us on that in that resolution so we could be part of this COVID relief funds. So at the present time, we haven't heard anything. We haven't been invited to talk with anybody. And it's very frustrating. It's over 7 months. I've talked to several people in labor relations who have basically said that they're trying to figure out how many people, what the time frame was,
okay,
and what the monetary hourly rate would be.
So when you say, Ron, labor relations, you mean people connected to the city, correct? In other words, the inner workings here, they're trying to run the numbers. Is that what you're saying?
Right, exactly. And then just recently, I understood from labor relations that it's been put in the hands of the council, and they seem to be having some problems with the federal ARP rules that impose the wage caps on the bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the wage caps is if you make over $98,600, you're not qualified.
So
I can't understand that because, you know, we all were there during this pandemic,
yeah,
risking our lives.
So are you confident then, Ron, that there is good faith being shown by everyone here, and maybe the slowdown of the process here is actually because there are so many strings attached to all this?
No. What they've done so far.
Mm-hmm.
They've allocated $8 million for broadband infrastructure, $8 million to help finance $395 million worth of upgrades to the sewer system, $500,000 for residents that were facing eviction, and a $700,000 youth program over the next 4 years. There's also an announcement of $10,000 for businesses in the city, amounting to no more than $25 million. So if you add the figures up, you know, you could come close to $50 million, which leaves a lot there for the essential workers. So I can't see that they would have so much of a problem to figure out how many people, what the hourly rate they want to give us.
Mm-hmm.
And the time frame is federal already. They said January 27th to, I believe, May 17th. So that's your time frame. If I could figure that out in a couple of minutes, they should be able to figure it out.
So Ron, who do you think, or do you think, or what are your thoughts about, is this getting held up on purpose? Are there people in the city who would rather your members not get this money? What are your feelings on it?
Well, we feel that basically we haven't been invited to talk about this, to sit down and find out where are the problems. Let us know where the problems are so we can tell our members. We don't have, you know, no information coming from the city, coming from the Common Council. And so we're just asking to be able to sit down at the table so that we can tell our members, all right, this is what's being done. Be patient. We're going to get there.
So your union leadership, unless you are formally invited to sit down and go over these numbers, Ron Lupica, you guys and gals feel that you're kind of in limbo here, at least as to getting a discussion going here, a give and take on this.
Right. And I don't want to just myself with the public facilities, includes police officers,
mm-hmm.
the fire department, NAGE and the Board of Ed 1522. It's just not public facilities. It's all essential workers that risk their lives for a period of time and especially early in the influenza, which we didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew. And there was no guidelines as to what to do. So, and we did so many extra jobs to our, we had to wash our vehicles. We had to disinfect them every day. So there was a lot more that was added to our workload besides our normal job. So, as a whole, as all my union brothers and throughout the city, that, you know, we feel that we're entitled to sit and discuss with the council where are the problems so that we can tell our union members what's going on and hopefully be patient. We're going to get there.
All right. Ron Lupica of AFSCME, Local 1303-468, about the now push to get some COVID-19 pay for not only his union brothers and sisters, but a bunch of them across the city of Bridgeport, municipal employees. Ron, thanks. We appreciate the time. And do me a favor. You got our number, so keep me up to date on this, okay?
Thanks very much, Paul, for having me.
Appreciate it. All right, Ron Lupica there, AFSCME. He represents an AFSCME local, but he says it's a whole bunch of union locals in the city saying, hey, how about a slice of this, all this federal money? for us. I had this gentleman on about a year ago. I went back and looked in my files, and we welcomed this gentleman on after he wrote a book that was a counterbalance and pointing out errors that he and many other historians found out in the 1619 Project, which has been pretty controversial. He has a new book out. It came out about a month ago. It's called Wrath, America Wrath, America Enraged. And we welcome author and anthropologist Peter Wood back to the program. Peter, here it's Paul on WYCC. Welcome back. How are you?
Well, I'm good, and thank you for having me back.
Well, I got good, great response, Peter, on our first interview we did. I think it was almost a year ago. It was a year ago in December of 2020 regarding your counter piece to the 1619 Project. This one, Wrath, America Enraged, I looked at the title and I said, and I read the summary and I said, okay, yeah, this is what I guess. Talk about the points you bring up, Peter, in your new book, especially in the political climate we have right now.
Well, this is maybe the most political book I've ever written, and it is starts with, and I think is based on the 2020 election, the January 6th riot, and the responses to both those events from both the left and right. It's a book about anger. It's a book about two kinds of anger, the anger of the American left, which has been at it in a very strong way, at least since the 2016 election, and the book takes it back much further than that, and the anger of the American right, which is a more complex phenomenon because the right doesn't like to get angry, despite what the left says about it. And it's a conflicted emotion, and which is now in this very odd position of being delegitimated. The talking points of the American left are generally along the lines that the right is furious and is engaged in insurrection or wants to have a civil war, and therefore the government authorities need to prepare against that with everything from barbed wire to a well-armed army ready to take out our own citizens. And the right is basically perplexed by all this. That is, the avenues by which people can ordinarily express dissent have been closed down. The mainstream press is, for the most part, deaf to anything that conservatives or traditionalists have to say. And the avenues of seeking justice through the courts have been closed off as well by courts declaring there's just nothing here to litigate. That leaves people with a lot of bottled up anger, and it leaves us in this odd situation in which it often seems that the left is provoking anger, but then not providing any avenues by which the right can express itself. I think that's a very dangerous situation for the country, not least for the mental health of people who just don't know how to respond to the situation they're in. So I wrote the book trying to find counsel for what we conservatives, I put myself there too, do about what might have been a stolen election, but in any case was a compromised election, and certainly about an unjust reaction to the events of January 6th, which we now know were partly incited by the FBI. So there we are. It's a book that deals with those matters at the beginning and at the end, and in between it provides a fairly detailed history of how our license for this volatile anger got established in our culture.
All right, Peter, hang on. That's a good setup. We'll be back. I want to get into this a little more. Peter Wood's new book, America Enraged, in which he talks about the anger on both sides of the aisle. Traffic and weather together. More with Peter Wood straight ahead. This is WICC. We had this gentleman on about a year ago talking about his book 1620, which was a direct retort to the 1619 Project from Nicole Hannah Jones and published, of course, in the New York Times, that many historians said, no, there are some big inaccuracies here. And now he has a new book, Wrath, America Enraged. Pick it up, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books that came out mid of last month. Peter Wood continues with us right here on WICC for a few more minutes. You know, Peter, I always like to say, and I'd love to get your thought on this, that no matter whether it's the left or the right, and you say kind of this symbiotic thing going on, the anger on both sides, I seem to think, Peter, and this is a fault of my business, the electronic media in particular, radio, podcasting, cable news, broadcast news, that we always tend to run, Peter Wood, to the 10% of people who are outraged, or the same old news personalities on the right and left, because it's kind of easy, Peter, to know what they're going to say. And I wonder, and I'd love to get your thought on this, does that foment the outrage? Do we go and we immediately want to hear what the yellers and screamers want, when if you got most people into a room, Peter, they would probably get along? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong here. What do you think?
Well, first, I think that the news finds anger entertaining, and that's because audiences find it entertaining. Mm. As long as you're not the person being directly yelled at, it's kind of fun to watch people lose their tempers. And the people who regularly appear on the talk programs and radio and TV are practiced performers of anger. Whether they're actually angry, you don't know. But you do know that they can put on a good show. And a good show is good for viewership and audioship, or whatever we call it. The audiences can connect to that. Now, the question is, are most people of a more temperate mindset? And the answer to that, I think, is a little bit deceptive. That is, mm-hmm. most of us aren't going to blow our tops as regularly as the talking heads on MSNBC or Fox News. But if we're pressed on things, we do frequently have pretty strong opinions. We may express them less in a less volatile way, but I think that the cultural divisions are strong. Now, I say this as someone who is a self-defined conservative. I live in Upper West Side, New York City, where I am completely surrounded by people who disagree with me.
And Peter, I have to tell you, my son lives in that neighborhood, too. He's on the Upper West Side, so I know from whence you speak. Yes, go ahead.
Right. And I also spend a good deal of time in central Vermont, where, likewise, I'm the sore thumb that sticks out. I manage to get along perfectly well with my neighbors, mm-hmm. and I have friends across the aisle. And, you know, what I have seen repeatedly is that it's far more often that people on the left will cancel people on the right than vice versa. I tend to think that what you see in the spread of anger is that conservatives are more conciliatory. That's not always the case. There are clearly hotheads all over the place. But I'm not going around canceling friends because I think their views are mistaken or foolish, although sometimes I do think that. Is there a real middle in the country? It kind of lies behind your question. And there are organizations around, like Better Angels, mm-hmm. that are Braver Angels, I think they now call themselves, that are rushing to that middle and trying to find the space in which left and right can talk to each other in a civil way. Well, I think we can talk to each other in a civil way, but that doesn't really mean we're getting any closer to agreement on the key issues of our time. And it's fairly easy to find things about which people will lose their heads pretty quickly. Start asking them about what happened on January 6th, mm-hmm. and you'll get very polarized opinions. Or ask them about vaccine mandates, or ask them about climate change, or ask them about what happened in Afghanistan or on the border with Mexico, or what's holding up our international shipping, and so on. We are a divided country, and it happens that some people specialize in pronouncing those divisions more adeptly than others, but I think they are really there, and it does point to this question of how we can best govern ourselves when we recognize that deep disagreements do exist, and behind those disagreements is a lot of bottled up anger.
So, Peter, finally, is it incumbent then on members of Congress, even though they have sharp divisions, and there have been sharp divisions, Peter, in this country since the first Continental Congress got together and all through things like the Civil War and the Depression and the Civil Rights era, would it help if members of Congress acted like the adults in the room so people could say, well, all right, maybe if they can get along, maybe we can? Or is that pie in the sky thinking now?
Well, it may be some pie in the sky there, but it's actually the right kind of thinking. I have been arguing for years that the cultural change in this country that licensed people to get so angry so often existed in other areas besides politics for decades, and it was only lately imported into politics. The reason for that is that our founders knew perfectly well that people would disagree in profound ways. They set up a constitution that put all sorts of checks and balances in place that made it important for politicians to govern themselves. So you did get people who would give vitriolic speeches on the floor of the Senate, but then afterwards go out to dinner together. There were these protocols that were built in because anger was so naturally a part of politics. There had to be a built-in diplomacy, some kinds of protocols that would keep it under control. So the anger is not new. What's new is that those protocols have fallen apart. Now we no longer have this willingness of the separate sides to talk together quietly in the hall. They're just as mad outside the theater of the floor of Congress as they are inside. So, yes, I think the part of the answer to this is to bring back what used to be called comity, not comedy, comity.
Yeah.
And that's that capacity to talk with each other in a civil manner, even though you may completely disagree about the substance of an issue. We've lost that. Getting it back is not an easy thing. It's not easy because there's been this change in temperament. We now view anger as something that empowers us, that it's always self-righteous anger. It's always on the verge of florid self-expression. That capacity to be self-governed, to look to the ways in which you can restrain your anger and figure out a more calm approach, has faded a lot from American life, not just on the floor of the legislatures and around the country, but in our popular entertainment, our movies, our music, our sports. It's everywhere now that anger is viewed as a positive force of authentic self-actualization and a kind of resource for advancing your cause. Wasn't always that way, but it is now.
The name of the book, Wrath, America Engaged. The author, Peter Wood, has joined us. Peter, good to hear from you again. Good luck with this book, and we'll chat down the road, Peter. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Thanks. There you go. Peter Wood, Wrath, America Enraged.